Good morning, everybody. We're going to be in Matthew's Gospel, Matthew chapter 24. So, your Bible, turn there. I want to say hello to the Cove campus. Glad you guys are with us this morning. This has been a really wonderful chapter, kind of new for me to even teach from, and a lot of things that are being said through it are really wonderful. And so, if you're visiting with us, and I've already met some visitors this morning, know kind of where we are in Matthew's gospel. And we've been making our way through this for quite some time. But Matthew chapter 24 is a really challenging passage, probably one of the most challenging in all of Matthew's gospel to understand and to interpret. And so we've been kind of working our way through it. We're going to be in the second part of it this morning. And so let me remind you a little bit of the first section, kind of what we talked about last week. The disciples come to Jesus. And they asked Jesus, isn't it amazing? Like, and I'm like, Jesus, look at the temple. Like, don't you think the temple is just gorgeous? It's magnificent, and its construction was. The disciples were right in thinking that what the temple's construction was, the complex that it had become. Jerusalem was certainly kind of a wonder in the world when you looked at what Herod had created, and through the number of renovations in the temple, it was a fantastic place visually. But it was also this place where, you know, God met with man, where sins were atoned for. And so it had this unique centerpiece within the world. And the disciples were leaving the temple with Jesus, and they said, Jesus, look at it. Like, isn't it fantastic? And Jesus says, I tell you, there's going to come a day where not one stone in the temple is on top of another. It's going to be dismantled, it's going to be destroyed. And the disciples found Jesus shortly after that, Matthew says, and they said, when? Like, when is that going to happen? When is the temple going to be destroyed? How is the kingdom going to come? What is the end of the world going to be like? And then Jesus begins to walk through a collection of thoughts and events and circumstances that would be signs of the end of the world, that the world would come to an end. And he starts saying there are going to be wars, famines, earthquakes. These are the kind of things that you're going to hear about. The gospel is going to go forward. It's going to touch every aspect of the world. It's going to cover the four corners. And Jesus begins to help the disciples know there's going to be a lot of things that are going to begin to happen. Nation is going to rise up against nation. And then Jesus gives the disciples a specific local event that's going to be a sign that the end is near. And that would be the abomination of desolation. If you look back in Matthew 24, you'll see this term. And this term is a term borrowed from Daniel, the book of Daniel. And it's about something blasphemous or unholy that would happen within the temple. And many historians believe, many Christian theologians and thinkers believe that this moment that Jesus is referencing, the abomination of desolation, happened in AD 70 when the temple was destroyed. Just a few years before that, Rome put a standard of its empire within the temple and desecrating it. And it started a four-year war, which ultimately led to the destruction of the temple. And Jesus says, when that happens, Luke's gospel says, when the armies surround Jerusalem, flee, get out of there. The destruction and death is going to be so significant that no one's going to survive. You need, to the disciples, you need to leave during that time. Do not stay in Jerusalem. And so Jesus gives the disciples all of these signs. And certainly they would think, man, when the temple is destroyed, that must be the end of the world. And Jesus says, no, it's not the end. It's just the beginning of the end. It's signs. All these things are signs. They're like birth pains. They're the discomforts, they're the contractions, but they're not the end yet. So the first part of Matthew 24, what we looked at last week, is really Jesus telling us what to know, how not to be confused, how not to become kind of doomsdayers and believing like it's happening right now, the end is here, like as if we could look at the signs of wars and famines and earthquakes and say, like, it's happening right now, the end is here. Jesus, those are all signs that the end is coming. So what to know is the first part. I think the second part of Matthew 24 we're going to look at this morning is Jesus telling us, well, then how to live. How to live. How to live in these times. How to live in the light of Jesus' certain coming. So look with me in Matthew 24, verse 29. It says, immediately after the tribulation of those days, The sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light and the stars will fall from heaven and the powers of the heaven will be shaken. Then will appear in heaven the sign of the Son of Man, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send out his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. So just let's stop right there. Jesus says, immediately after the tribulation of those days. Now, what days is he talking about? He's talking about all the things that he just kind of, all those preceding predictions of wars, famines, earthquakes, nations rising against nations, the destruction of the temple. Those are the days of tribulation that Jesus is talking about. And he says, after those days, the sun will be darkened, right? The moon will be lightless, stars will fall, powers in heaven will be shaken. Now, this may be literal. Like, however long those days are, after that, there's going to be something celestial that happens when Jesus comes, right? That the sun and the moon and the stars might actually disappear. You could see that Jesus is saying that. But I also want to say, this kind of language that Jesus is using, this prophetic, apocalyptic language, is present in a lot of places in the Bible. Let me show you Isaiah chapter 13. When Isaiah talks about the prediction of how the Lord will come and judge Babylon, he says in Isaiah chapter 13, verse 10, "For the stars of the heavens and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be dark at its rising, and the moon will not shed its light." Go all the way to the final story where John is receiving the revelation of what the kingdom of heaven is going to look like when Jesus truly comes back in all of his glory. Revelation chapter 6, verse 12. "When he opened the sixth seal, I looked, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth. The full moon became like blood, and the stars of the sky fell to the earth as the fig tree sheds its winter fruit when shaken by a gale." So I want you to hear this. The Bible often talks about major events as if they are connected in both in the heavens and the earth, as if heaven and earth are connected, that they're both impacted by the significance. We get this too when Jesus is born, right? What happens in the sky? A star appears, right? There's something in the heavens marking this birth and incarnation here on earth. It's as if the heavens and the earth are connected in these great movements. And Matthew 24 says that after the days of tribulation, there will be such a great upheaval. There'll be such a great and significant impact of the Lord's return that the heaven and earth will both be shaken. Heaven and earth will both be impacted by this, and they will display the significance of the Lord's coming. Both will, right? And what is the significance, right? It's the Son of Man appearing. It's the Son of Man's return. Wars, earthquakes, tribulations, false teachers. Many people are going to fall away from the church. The gospel is going to go forward, right? Then after that, after those days, that heaven and earth will both display in significance, the impact of Jesus coming. We're both going to feel it. Jesus' appearance is going to change what we see in heaven and on earth. And at that point, Jesus says the angels will be sent to the four corners to gather the elect from the end, from one end to the other. Man, what an encouragement that is. Listen to what Jesus is saying. At the moment, the kind of cataclysmic moment when everything in heaven and earth feels like it is being undone, in that moment, every person of God, every Christian, every believer will be gathered, no matter how scattered they are. No one lost, no one forsaken. That the angels themselves will be commissioned to gather God's people, to bring them in. What a great thing. When the world is undoing itself, when the world is being ruined, right? When the end comes, when all of this is happening, God's people will be saved. Not one, not one, not one will be lost. Not one. Verse 32, "From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branches become tender and put out its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see all these things, you know that he is near at the very gate. Truly, I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my word will not pass away. So Jesus says, I want to remind you of the fig tree. Right? It's a common metaphor, a common illustration being used within the scriptures. Jesus points to it again. Look at the fig tree. Most trees in this area in Israel were evergreens. There were only two that lost their leaves, the almond tree and the fig tree. And the fig tree kind of gained its leaves late within the spring. So it was the perfect precursor to summer. When the fig tree gained its leaves, you know, summer is close by. So Jesus says, so when you see all these things, what is it? What are all these things? It's all these tribulations. It's all of these things that he's just described in the sermon. It's all these things that are pointing you that the end is near. Jesus, when you see all these things, and this generation did, the very generation that Jesus is talking to saw wars, famines, false teachers, earthquakes, nation rising against nation. They saw the destruction of the temple. They saw all of these things, and they saw the spreading of the gospel. Jesus' word is true. That generation did not pass away until all of these things were beginning to be felt. All of these birth pains, the beginning of the end was seen. So then Jesus answered the question of when. When, Jesus, are you going to return? When? You're providing all these signs for the end. You're telling us kind of what to look at so that we don't get confused. You're telling us what to see within the world so that we don't lose hope. But when? Answer the question of when. And here he says in verse 36, but concerning that day and hour, no one knows. Not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. For as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, there was eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark. And they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away. So will be with the coming of the Son of Man. Then two men will be in the field, and one will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, and one will be taken and one left. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know what day your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. So remember this idea from last week. Sometimes when you have a challenging passage and it's difficult to interpret what is being said, at times the application of the passage helps you interpret it. At times the why this passage is being said can help you understand what is being said. And what is the application of this passage? You'll see it. Verse 42, stay awake. Verse 44, be ready. Stay awake and be ready. That's what Jesus wants you to hear. In all of this, Jesus is saying, stay awake and be ready. And then Jesus gives us three pictures to consider. He gives us a flood, he gives us a field, and he gives us a thief. A flood, a field, and a thief. Now, it's worth looking at. You should look. Jesus says no one knows the hour, that the angels don't know the hour. Even Jesus himself doesn't know the hour. I would say it would be wonderful to just explore, how is that possible? What does that mean that Jesus himself doesn't know the hour? That Jesus exists as God the Son in the Trinity, but somehow as the Son of Man, right? There is something that Jesus has in his humility given up. There is something that's being expressed here and really throughout the Gospels that Jesus so dependent upon the Father to say what the Father says and to do what the Father does, that this information is not his. Is not his, no, it is something for the Father. And it's this humbling of Jesus, so dependent on the Father that Philippians 2 says that God, because of that humbling, exalted him to be the name above every name. There's something beautiful happening within the Trinity here, and we don't fully understand it, but Jesus says, I don't know the hour. I don't know, can't tell you. But it will be like the days of Noah. In other words, it's gonna be a typical day. It's going to be like any day. There'll be people eating and drinking, marrying, being given in marriage. You know what? That sounds like a good day. People are going to be celebrating. There'll be parties, right? And the floodwaters come. But so many people will be unaware. So many people will not be ready. It'll be like two men in a field. They'll both be working and one will be taken and one will be left. It'll be like two women at the grinding mill, kind of turning the mill, and one will be taken and one will be left. Now, I want to say I'm aware that this particular section of Matthew 24 is often included in a thought of the rapture. Maybe you're familiar with this. You've been around church for a while. The rapture, that there's a moment where God removes his people kind of before the coming of Christ. And this passage is often connected in this, that one will be taken and one will be left. A moment before Jesus' return where we are kind of raptured out of tribulation. But let me kind of walk you through what Matthew 24 is saying here. The whole passage, the whole chapter is about how God's people will experience tribulation. The whole passage, wars, famines, earthquakes, false teachers, nation rising against nation, all of it, the end times is full of these experiences that we as God's people are walking through. And so Jesus is telling us this up front so that you don't get distracted, so that you don't lose hope, that you don't get detoured into false speculations and end time predictions, that you realize that all of this activity that we're seeing in the world are the things that are meant to focus us, to narrow us down, to realize that this world is ending, right? So the tribulation is something that we see God bringing his people through, and he's telling us about it right now so that we don't lose a sense of God's purpose in it, that we don't lose a sense of God's care. Secondly, when one is in the field and is taken and the other is left, that taken and being left is inside Jesus talking about when he returns. It's at his return, Jesus is saying, where two men will be in a field. And at his return, one will be taken and one will be left. So it's inside the Son of Man's return. That experience of being saved or judged is with inside the return of Christ. That's what Matthew 24 is telling us. And I'll just give you one other thing to consider. We aren't sure of the two men in the field, which one is actually saved? Because if you consider the previous illustration of Noah and the flood that came, then the one that is taken away would be the one that was taken into judgment, and the one that is left behind is actually the one that escapes the flood. So the passage isn't clear for us on which person is actually judged and which person is actually saved. We just know one is taken and one is left. And so Jesus is trying to prepare us that tribulations are going to come, that there is going to be salvation and judgment in the fullest sense when he returns. And so because we don't know who's being taken and who's being left, who's being saved and who's being judged, be ready. That's what he's saying. Be ready. Jesus is saying your house is going to get broken into. And if you knew when it was going to get broken into, you'd be ready. It happens all the time in my neighborhood. I don't know why. But car break-ins in Hampton Cove are just kind of the normal news of the day. In fact, I saw a message even just yesterday of some neighbor saying, hey, my car got broken into. And this is what happens. You just kind of wake up one morning, you go out to your car, and for some reason, the interior dome light is just on. Or there's a pair of sunglasses or a wallet or something that's, you just don't know where it is anymore. You haven't seen it in a long time. And these break-ins, you can begin to hear. Neighbors begin to talk and like, hey, I think there's kind of a string of break-ins happening. Make sure your car doors are locked. Now imagine if I told you tonight at your house at 1 a.m., someone's going to try to break into your cars. You are, at that point, at 12:50, going to be hiding in the bushes with a water hose. You're in the back seat of your car with an air horn. Like you're doing something, right? You're not just going to sleep. You're not going to leave the doors open. Like, you're going to be prepared. And that's what Jesus is saying. If you knew the hour the thief was going to come, oh, you would be ready. But you don't know the hour. So be ready. So be vigilant. So stay awake. So stay alert. Like, this is what Jesus is saying. Don't get caught off guard. There is this this unpredictable certainty to the return of Christ. And this is a good place for us to live. We need that. Like Jesus is saying, this is important for you. How do you stay ready? This is what Jesus is saying. I want you to stay ready for this, that Christ is returning. I'm going to ask this again in a minute, but how often are you thinking about the return of Jesus? Day to day, week to week, month to month. How often are you thinking about the return? Right? Jesus says, I want you to stay ready. And I think the answer, there's part of the answer of how we stay ready is tucked into this last section, verse 45. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom his master has set over his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all of his possessions. But if that wicked servant says to himself, my master is delayed, and begins to beat his fellow servants and eat and drinks with drunkards, the master of that servant will come on one day when he does not expect it and at an hour that he does not know, and will cut him to pieces and put him with the hypocrites in the place where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So throughout this section, there has been this similar theme, right? No one knows, but it's going to happen. I can't tell you the hour, but there will be a moment. And here we get to this final kind of story, this final picture of unpreparedness, right? Similar themes to the whole thing. And you see the wicked servant say this. It says to himself, my master is delayed, right? My master is delayed. And what happens next? Out of this mindset, the wicked servant then begins to beat the other servants and drink himself away, right? This out of sight, out of mind mentality of Christ's return causes us, and here, to degrade. We lose a moral and an ethical standing. When we don't think about future judgment, when we don't think about justice, when we don't think about Jesus' return, what happens is our lives begin to disintegrate. They begin to move downward. And the servant's life is connected, right? The good servant's life is connected to this good and right thing that he's looking forward in Jesus' return. When Jennifer goes away for a few days, see family, vacation, work, I know when she's going to come back. And do you know what I do with the kids about an hour before she comes home? We start cleaning. We clean. We put everything in order. I don't want any dishes in the sink. I don't want any clothes unfolded. Like, I want everybody's rooms in good shape. Because when Jennifer comes home, I want her to see the house in good shape. And I'm not as concerned, honestly, about her coming in and finding us doing something bad. I just want to see her face to see the house in order. I just want her to be blessed that we did what was right and good while you were away. I know the joy that it will bring to her when she comes in tired and she realizes she just doesn't have to go immediately back to work. This is what's happening here. When we lose a sense of the Lord's certain return, what begins to happen is that we begin to lose ourselves. We begin to lose our sense of purpose. We begin to harm ourselves and harm one another. Love begins to vanish and disappear. Like, all these things are connected to a readiness and alertness that Christ is going to come. So we stay ready. How do we stay ready? By stewarding the things that God has given us to do. Right? The faithful servant was in the house and was stewarded, was given the responsibility of handing out food. You've been given things to care for. You've been given things to hand out. You've been given means and resources and time and energy that is meant to feed, that is meant to bless. You are here to steward and care. God has given you certain responsibilities. And when you know what those are and you are then faithful in those, you become the faithful servant who is doing the good work that God has given him to do until he comes. One of the great awakening, first great awakening preachers, Whitfield, Edwards, I don't know which one it was asked the question, how would your week change if you knew that Jesus was coming back this week? What would change about your week if you knew Jesus was coming back at the end of the week? And the faithful preacher pulled out his calendar and he said, I would do all of this. I would do all this. This is what I would do. Yes, that's the invitation that we have to be ready, to put our hands to the things that God has asked us to steward, to be faithful in this time. And Jesus says, if you'll do this, I mean, there is reward in this, of what God will reward us, how God will put us over more. I'm just like, can you imagine the face of Jesus when he returns and finds us excited about his return, ready and alert, not letting kind of things go undone, not letting our houses getting broken into, not degrading ourselves, not harming one another, not losing love, but staying in this sweet spot of readiness and preparedness, being faithful. Are you living ready? Are you living ready? There are some things that we do in life, some events the next day that you just don't even sleep well at night. You know these things? You're just not going to get much sleep because you're so, I don't want to miss this. I'm so excited about this. Like, this is so important. You lay out your clothes. Like, you don't even need the alarm clock. Actually, you're waking up every 2 or 3 hours checking to see if the alarm clock is right. You are resting in Christ, but you are ready for his return. You are looking forward to it. When we aren't, our actions and our purpose, it gets confused. We begin to drift. We begin to do harm to ourselves. We begin to do harm to others. When you were in school, maybe you also had this experience where there would be a bell that would go off at the end of your class. And when that bell would go off, you had 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 7 minutes, to get to the next class, to get in your seat before the next bell went off and that class started, right? The bell system. There were two bells. The Bible tells us there's only one bell. There's only one. And that bell sounded at the resurrection and ascension of Jesus. And when that bell sounded, from that point on, we are meant to be ready, because at any moment, Jesus could be today. It could be today. At any moment to be ready, in every moment to be awake, to be alert, to be watching. Do you hear this? The opportunity to experience this, the purpose, to have your heart set on something. Do you know where our hearts begin to suffer and how we begin to worry and how we begin to lose hope? It's because we lose sight of this great, good, wonderful Savior and Judge who is going to gather the saints from the four corners of the world and bring the elect to himself and bring what's right and what's good and restore and bring a new heaven and a new earth. This is at the finish line of our hope. This is what we look forward to, and this is what we're being invited into, to live as if it could happen right now. And when you do, like you build up an ability not to lose your cool, not to worry as much, not to lose your hope. And the things happening around us, all the things that are breaking our hearts, all the things that are signs of the end, are meant now to focus us, narrow us, make us even more prayerful, more vigilant, more aware of the stewardship, more watchful, to realize that the world's days are numbered. And even though it may come through great tribulation, on the other side of it, life, glory, Jesus. Let's pray.